Today's episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast is brought to you by Spotify Green Rooms. Download the Spotify Green Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On Spotify rooms. Spotify Green Rooms, changing the way we talk sports. How's it going, everyone? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Today's Friday, June 18th, 2021. Second episode I'm releasing here on Friday. Had a little bit of a, you know, all over the place in terms of scheduling interviews, but glad that I could get both interviews up. First one already up from Vincent Sampiero from Locked On Dodgers. This one with David Esser from Section 215. I had a chance to sit down with him. We've interacted on Twitter before. I've had a chance to admire his work from afar. We have never actually spoken over Zoom or in a podcast form or anything like that before. So we discussed everything from the state of the Phillies, how they're playing this month in June, the rotation, how Joe Girardi's been doing this season, all the fun stuff in terms of the 2021 Phillies. It was a fun conversation for sure as this team heads to San Francisco for three games against Gabe Kapler and the San Francisco Giants. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with David Esser. Take a listen.
All right, I'll make sure I'm recording and we'll go in 3, 2, 1. Joining us on today's episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast from Section 215, as well as a variety of other outlets, we bring in David Esser. David, how are you doing today?
Dan, I'm doing well, man. Thanks for bringing me on today.
Yeah, of course. So a lot to discuss. Well, there's always a lot to discuss with this Phillies team, but they sit exactly at 500 right now, again, which is ironic because I have oftentimes on this podcast called them this team just feels like they tread water. No matter how low or how high they get, it seems like they always return to that median point. In your opinion, is that a fair assessment of this team? Do you think that, would you be surprised if by the end of the season we're sitting right around 81-81?
Well, Dan, first and foremost, with the Sixers about to be eliminated, let's give the Phillies the credit they deserve as the best team in Philadelphia. Like, come on now. We beat the Dodgers. We beat the Dodgers.
One time out of three, but sure. Yeah, they beat the Dodgers. Yeah,
we'll take what we can get.
It was the most talked about sporting event in Philadelphia on Wednesday night. Yeah.
The biggest event, maybe in Philadelphia sports history, beat the Dodgers. No, in all seriousness, yeah, they definitely feel like a 500 team. There was a point where I thought things were going to slip away. I believe they got down to five games under 500, and then they went on a little run. They pulled it right back in, and then, you know, they lose a series to the Dodgers and we're right back at 500. And it's felt that way for the past couple of years, and they keep adding and subtracting. And for whatever reason, we're just stuck at that 500 mark. So I think that's a really, really fair assessment.
And so that's kind of where I was going with this, is they just came off a really strong homestand. They've done this a few times this season. I look, you know, I have this schedule in front of me marking all the wins and losses. They started the year like this, 5-1 at home, and then immediately followed it up with a 1-5 road trip. They went on a 5-0 streak in the first week in May, and then they go on the road and immediately get right back to 500. Now they started the month of June hot, 7-2. They win that one game in Cincinnati that was on June 1st, got a game rained out. All the other games are at home. They win a series with the Nationals, which was the first series they had won since 3 weeks previous with the Nationals. They win 2 out of 3 from Atlanta, which is a sizable deal. I won't take anything away from that. They win 2 from the Yankees, who are struggling by their own standards here this season, but big games, big crowds. It was nice to kind of have that real atmosphere back. But then they immediately go out to LA and lose 2 of 3, and we'll see how they fare in this Giants series. But I view this road trip as the biggest test they've had all season long, because it's like we've seen them do this home winning streak thing before. Now let's see you go on the road, play games at 10 o'clock at night when it feels like nobody's watching, even if it is the defending world champs like the Dodgers, kind of West Coast. You're not going to have, I mean, there are Phillies fans that make their way out to LA and there's transplants and things like that, but you're not going to have a sizable Phillies crowd out in Los Angeles or in San Francisco relative to on the East Coast. Let's see how you get a spark. And besides the fact that they got injuries to Gene Segura and Bryce Harper, which we'll get to in just a second here, I mean, does it seem like they're trending back in the same direction on the road? And what have you made? What do you attribute to the road struggles? Not just this season. It's been the past couple of years. It's a recurring trend.
Dan, that's a good question. And I wish I had an answer, because it's hard to explain, because these are road struggles that date back to 2018 when the team was completely different. I mean, you had Mike Franco as one of the big bats in the middle of the order. Fast forward a few years, we have Bryce Harper, JT, Gene Segura, Didi Gregorius when he's healthy. You have all these guys, and they still can't win on the road. I mean, they've changed the manager. They've changed the front office. I'm sure they've they've shuffled around guys on in the training staff, whatever the case is. I don't know why they still suck on the road. I understand that playing at home is typically an advantage for Philadelphia sports just in general. They have a strong home field, so I get that. But the road struggles are hard to understand, and especially with this specific Phillies team, the way they're constructed, they're so top-heavy with their pitching staff, right? That's typically something that translates well onto the road because pitching is universal. You can pitch in different ballparks. Well,
defense in any sport theoretically travels. That's anyway the saying, right? You would think.
Yeah, you would think. And specifically when you're pitching, Citizens Bank Park is not a good park to pitch in. It's small in the corner. Then you go out to a huge stadium, out in San Francisco. You would assume that translates, and for whatever reason, it hasn't. I don't have a great answer. I don't know why. Maybe they're just one or two players away from being a really good road team. Maybe they have to change the manager again to be a really good road team. I don't know, but it's probably the number one thing that's holding them back because at home, they look like a playoff.
You mentioned the manager. You mentioned the Sixers. I have long drawn the parallels between Joe Girardi and Doc Rivers, and I can further explain that in a second, but we'll keep it Phillies for the moment. What have you made? We've now had 60 games last year, 66 games this year, I believe. So 126 games of Joe Girardi. You can chalk last year in some ways up to it's a COVID season. You can explain some things away. It was the worst bullpen ever. I don't know how many moves he could have made to improve some certain things, but at least so far this season, what have you made of the Joe Girardi era here in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I've definitely not been impressed, but I'm also not, I don't want to put Joe Girardi in prison. Which that there's definitely a voice where people just hate Joe Girardi. And I love the Doc Rivers comparison. Yeah, we'll keep it Phillies for the meantime. Joe's tough. I think when you look at some of his moves and some of his managerial decisions, just outside of the Phillies realm, I think they're fine. I don't think he's doing anything that's galaxy brain. The double switches sometimes, but for the most part, I think the way he uses the bullpen is fine. I think his late game substitutions are fine. I think the way he constructs the lineup on most days is fine. I think a lot of it just comes down to the roster probably isn't as good as he's used to. It's probably not as good as it should be if you want to make the playoffs. So I think sometimes you see, we've gone back and forth with Hector Neris on Twitter, and Hector, he's their best closer. That's kind of just where we're at. So if Joe Girardi puts Hector out as a closer, and he blows a save, everybody's like, oh my God, what is Joe thinking? I'm like, well, who else is he supposed to put? That's who they paid all this money to be a closer. He's on, I believe, $5 million to be the closer. So I think for the most part, Joe, he definitely hasn't elevated them to the point that we thought. You bring in a guy with World Series experience, this iconic Yankees, pedigree, you're expecting him to elevate. He hasn't. I also don't think he's holding them back in any sense. I think he's just kind of the manager, and then the team's the team. So here we are at 500.
That's fair. I'll give you my take on Girardi in a second, but I'm so glad you mentioned Hector Neris because I've long been one of his, no one talks about him for that month where he doesn't allow a run, right? And I thought the last time he allowed a run in Atlanta, I thought it was a bad pitch selection by JT. And here he's blown up a couple of times. And I think there's a pretty good assessment of it I heard last week, which is he's the longest tenured guy on the team. And so people have so many memories of him. And of course, with any closer, it's like an offensive lineman, right? Or a kicker. You remember the bad things they do 1,000 times more than any of the good moments they have. Unless you're dealing with Mariano Rivera or Trevor Hoffman, where people remember them closing big game after big game after big game. Hector Neris has never been on a playoff team. He's never come in for a playoff save. It's only regular season opportunities, usually on disappointing Phillies teams, much of which is not his fault. And so anytime he contributes to that is this guy can no longer be the closer. And so that's why I also don't think they have a better option, forgetting even the pay thing for a second, because I'd be the first one to say, well, the pay is a sunk cost. If you have a better option, I would go to it. I don't think Archie Bradley is a better option. I don't think Jose Alvarado is a better option. I don't think there's a better option within that bullpen. And Brandon Kinsler, who is closing experience. I don't think there's a better option right now to close games for the Phillies. Obviously, when it rains, it pours with Maris, and you can almost see it right away. The splitter's not splitting. The other day in that Yankee game, I could see it coming for a mile away. He's fidgeting, he's fixing his hat. The splitter doesn't look like it's that sharp. He dropped the ball on the mound at one point. He walks two guys in a row. It was almost like the LeMahieu home run was an inevitability at that point, just because it's either all going to come at once or he's locked down. Now, the other night, he comes in Dodger Stadium, and I like to have a little fun, and you know, called me out for it a little bit of like, hey, Hector Neris coming at Dodger Stadium. No doubt here. Like, they're going to win. It's just game over, because of course his worst appearance probably as a Philly was at Dodger Stadium a couple of years ago. So I'm a Hector Neris defender. I think it's like, I'm not going to say he's perfect or that he's like one of the best closers in the league, but it's so far down the list of my concerns with this team. In regards to Girardi, he's been better of late, in my opinion. I'm trying to think of a specific move I've taken issue with. Sometimes I feel like there have been, like, I think back to, they're about to play the Giants. The last time they played the Giants, I thought it was Connor Brogdon, I believe, who he left in way too long to allow two separate three-run home runs. And it set some sort of record of the first pitcher in ages to allow two three-run home runs. Well, you say, well, wow, that's impressive. But also, no one like stays in long enough to do that. There was a few other instances where he left Chase Anderson into bat and to send him back out for the sixth inning to like face one or two more hitters. Like, just things like knowing your team and little tactical advantages that you would expect an experienced guy like Joe Girardi, who has won a world championship 10 or 11 years ago, well, 12 years ago at this point, to make a difference on this team. The defense has not improved. Just basic fundamental things seem like they haven't improved. And the reason why I draw the Doc Rivers comparison is because Doc Rivers won the NBA Finals the year before Joe Girardi. And now I think the proof is in the pudding. Has basically, I mean, he has bounced around a little bit more than Girardi has. He was with the Yankees for a while after that. But Doc's been a disappointing coach, especially in the playoffs since. And now I think we're starting to see that here in Philly. Series is not over, but you would certainly think, based upon the talk around the Sixers, that this season's over. I'm not giving them much of a chance to come back and win this series in seven. And at a certain point, that has to be on the coach or the manager's impact on the game is just overstated. A, because in the case of Girardi or even Doc with the Celtics, their team was just too talented. Maybe they didn't hold them back in that case, but they're not really adding the value we all thought. And it's especially annoying, of course. I don't think you're even allowed to mention the Giants in a Phillies realm without mentioning that they're in first place and managed by Gabe Kapler. Everyone thought he was the issue. Well, clearly he either has learned a ton in his second managerial spot, which is probably true, but he was never holding this team back as much as other people thought. He got 500 teams with rosters, in my opinion, well worse than the one we're dealing with right now.
Today's episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast is brought to you in part by Fully Loaded Chew. Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long-cut pouches that give you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz you're used to without tobacco. Available in 9 different flavors, Fully Loaded Chew is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine, the purest form of any nicotine available. It's the only moist nicotine pouch on the market. All other nicotine pouches are dry white pouches. Nothing dips, spits, and packs like Fully Loaded. Fully Loaded Chew is offering a Locked On Team listeners offer specially for you listeners. Right now, you can try it for just $1. That's right, just $1. Go to www.fullyloadedchew.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, just $1, and free shipping if you use that code LOCKEDON at checkout. The next time you go for a dip, make it a Fully Loaded Chew. Again, go to fullyloadedchew.com and use the promo code that I just gave you. Also have to tell you about rockauto.com. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all of the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only the brands their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? Rock Auto, it's a family business, serving do-it-yourselfers for more than 20 years. Rock Auto's prices are reliably low for every single customer. They have everything you could ever need: brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even that new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today and find the solution your auto part needs. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and again, tell them Locked On sent.
Yeah, and when you hire a guy like Joe Girardi, expectations are greater. I totally agree with Gabe Kapler. I was a Gabe Kapler defender. I still am. I mean, I thought his moves were unorthodox, but that was just the way the game's
they played. Had an unorthodox roster. They had 4 first basemen at one point, and they found ways to get like 80 wins out of those teams. It's like, you look back, it's like, how?
Absolutely. I mean, Nick Pivetta was a mainstay in the rotation, and you had to get creative. And I think the real ironic part is as Joe Girardi, because I agree, I think he's been a little bit better as of late. And one of the biggest reasons is his new approach to the starting rotation. I know you talked about this in your most recent episode, but the Spencer Howard piggyback thing, people hate it. People want him to pitch into the sixth and seventh inning. And in theory, he could. The fastball velocity would dip off, the control would dip off, but you could just leave him out there and say, hey, bud, you're a top prospect, figure it out. I don't care if you win or lose. But Joe Girardi, he's looked around the league. He's seen what teams like the Giants do, what the Rays do, some of the other more, savvy teams in baseball. And it's a short leash on the mound. He's quick to the bullpen. He's piggybacking. He's using multiple long relievers. And that's been one of the more effective ways for the Phillies to stay in ball games, is saying, all right, Spence, use up all your ammo in 3-4 innings. All right, Ranger Suarez, use up all your ammo. Bailey Falter, he looked really good the other night. And it's something Gabe Kapler used to do, and people hated Gabe for it. And now it's one of Joe Girardi's better tactical moves as of late, of saying, hey, Spence, I want you to develop, but at the same time, you're best used in this 3-4 inning, super obnoxious, kind of long relief role.
Yeah, no, I don't have any issue with that in the short term. My concern, you know, appreciate listening to the episode and I encourage anyone else to go back and listen to it, is that, like, are you going to train this? Like, are you going to train Spencer Howard to only do that? Like, is this just what he is permanently? I'm fine with this in the short term. Does this mean that he only, like, if he's being told to use all his ammo, as you said, in 3 or 4 innings, I don't know, in your opinion, does that lead a pitcher to not be able to spread out his ammo? Like, are you forcing bad habits in a way? I know in the short term it's not, but long term, are we selling our top pitching prospect short of his full potential?
Yeah, it's tough to say. I think the biggest thing with Spence is, and we're talking a lot about expectations, the expectations on Spencer are insane. I get he's the top pitching prospect. I get he was one of the better double-A pitchers in all of the minor leagues when he was down there. But I mean, he's made 10 career starts. I have no idea what he's going to look like. He could turn around next season or in 2 seasons and be a perfectly fine top of the rotation arm. He could turn around and be a reliever. I don't know. It's too early to tell. I think the biggest thing with Spencer, and I want to kind of turn this question back to you, if I was running the Phillies, I wouldn't have him in the major leagues this year. I'd have him in AAA. And I'd say, go get a full year. Don't worry about COVID. Let's put that behind us. Let's get your shoulder 100%. Let's work on your curveball a little bit. Let's work on your fastball velocity and your command. Let's get a full year of 30-plus starts where you're going 6 innings every day down in AAA. The problem is Chase Anderson, Matt Moore, Vince Velasquez probably soon. These guys aren't major league pitchers. So now you're forced to turn to Spencer and say, hey, no one else can pitch. Matt Moore, Chase Anderson, they're going to be off the roster soon. So now you have to jump into this weird 3-4 inning role. And that frustration to me, that's not a Joe Girardi thing. That was a Dave Dombrowski thing where he pulled the wrong strings this offseason. He signed the wrong starters. I wanted Taiwan Walker on this baseball team all summer long or all winter long, and they didn't do it. And Chase Anderson, Matt Moore, two of the worst starters in the National League. So my kind of turning this back to you, like, we're all in agreement Dave Dombrowski didn't have a great first offseason with the Phillies, right? Like, that's common knowledge.
Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned that because they went out and signed 2 pitchers, neither of which, like, I was sitting here all winter saying, like, well, maybe they can give you competent starts. And even at the beginning, I was, I don't want to say defending Chase Anderson, but looking at the glass half full and saying, well, okay, he gives you 5 innings, 2 runs, 3 runs. Like, he's keeping them in the game. This is what you expect Chase Anderson to be. That's why I got so annoyed when Girardi, I think it was in St. Louis, that he batted him in the 5th inning with the bases loaded, with a team that you know struggles with offense, and you know Chase Anderson, the wheels are totally falling off in the 6th. Like, how do I know that? And the manager of the team, like, it was just so blatant. So that was a move I especially took issue with. Dombrowski, no, you're right. He didn't have a great, like, this is another heightened expectations thing, right? Dave Dombrowski, who was one, and I was on once with Joe Giglio and WIP, and we were sitting here discussing issues with the Phillies, and it was like, you know, you look around this roster and no one's really won. So for whatever it's worth, like, the it factor of, like, knowing how to win doesn't really exist with anyone on this roster. And I came back and was like, well, that's true, but the manager and the president, de facto GM, whatever you want to call it, have won a lot, and they raise the expectations by themselves, and you're not seeing that reflected on the roster. This is a guy who has built multiple championship teams, known for trading away a lot of prospects to go all in on win now. Phillies don't have a ton of prospects to trade, but he took the job. So that, in a sense, believes or means that you would like to think that he believes that he can do it, that there is a championship team that can be built with this organization. And you would like to think that Joe Girardi in the dugout would have that same kind of effect. When you go out and sign Matt Moore and Chase Anderson and Vince Velasquez, and you commit, I believe, a combined $11 million to them. And funny enough, Velasquez has been the best one, as it turned out. Yeah, you're right. You force yourself into a thing with Spencer Howard. You're saying, you know, in a perfect world, maybe they would just keep him down in the minors. You could manage his innings. It wouldn't be as scrutinized. You could probably leave him in longer because the minor leagues are more about development. You're not as concerned as you are with winning the game at the major league level. But this team's trying to win the playoffs now. They're not a rebuilding team anymore, even though there are nights where they look like it. This is a team trying to make the playoffs right now, try and win now, basically because of where their roster is. And so they're looking around and saying, we can't justify starting Spencer Howard in Lehigh when he's better than the options we have here. So it kind of snowballed, but you're exactly right. It snowballed from, like, the reason Spencer Howard is making all these starts now and they're piggybacking it dates back to what they did this past winter. And I would be interested to get Dave Dombrowski in a room. I would really like to think that he would go in a different direction. Would he have gone in the direction of a Taiwan Walker? I'm trying to remember the other names. I believe James Paxton was another answer out there, where maybe you sign one of those guys and you're still dealing with Vince Velasquez. Like, I didn't want Vince Velasquez in the rotation either, but it actually would have been better to sign one of those guys and leave Velasquez as the fifth starter rather than having a case where neither of these guys end up startable. I thought at least one of them would not be good. Turns out neither of them were good. They're just not giving you anything at the major league roster. So that, you know, I do have a harder time getting on Girardi for that, because we don't know who had the voice in those cases. Dombrowski is supposed to manage the roster right now. Girardi's doing the best he can to manage this team for the here and now. I just wonder if, you know, one hand isn't really on the same page with the other hand's doing. Are you going to, I don't know. I hope it doesn't stunt his long-term development. The Phillies don't exactly have a good track record of getting these things right when it comes to their prospects. That's where my level of concern comes. I think based upon where we are now, it's probably the best way to handle things. But you're entirely right. This dates back to what they did in the offseason, and that's what annoys me, because when they signed Matt Moore and Chase Anderson, it wasn't like anyone was like super high on these moves. We kind of saw the potential downsides, and now it's leaking into the potential growth of Spencer Howard, and that annoys me even more.
Yeah, and I was with you with Chase Anderson. Even during his first couple of starts, they were bad, but I was like, yeah, you know, the five.
Whatever, maybe, you know, who's to say? Maybe they could. And by the way, if one of these pitchers goes down, well, Spencer Howard sustains another injury. That's really bad for a variety of reasons. But if Zach Wheeler goes down, this team's going to really rail out of control. But Nola, Wheeler, or Eflin get hurt, like, who's making starts every fifth day? We can't, you know, bullpen games, you going back to Moore, Anderson, like, they're really, really in a bad place if that happens. Like, no depth coming up behind them. You're saying a prayer every time those guys go out to the mound that basically they don't get hurt.
Oh, absolutely. They're one injury to Eflin, Wheeler, Nola from being a very bad baseball team, because those three are the only three keeping them in. You know, they're one other minor league pitcher who I was like, maybe he can give them something. Adonis Medina, he's not been good this year, so you can almost write him off as contributing. With Dombrowski, I think the one thing with him is I've heard a lot of pushback in the sense that he was hired late. He didn't have a lot of time. A lot of the guys that were signed to the roster, he didn't sign. Vince Velasquez, that was done by Ned Rice, I believe. Like, it wasn't even a Dombrowski.
Yeah, it was the regime before. I remember the deadline for one of the moves I hated most of the offseason was not giving Didi the qualifying offer, or at least offering it to him. That was pre-Dombrowski. Now you have him on a two-year deal. Starting shortstops, Ronald Torres. I get he's been hurt, but I don't even know what you do when Didi comes back. We know he likes Torres, but you have Didi signed up for 2 years, so you're going to have to go back at him some point. But yeah, it's annoying that he was signed late. It's not his fault, but it's an organizational issue as a whole.
Yeah, they completely messed up the way they handled the offseason. I mean, they were talking about it being like a bridge year that they just weren't even going to care, and then they managed to lure Dombrowski away from Nashville. But
no one wants to uproot during a pandemic, and then they set the bar low. It was how ridiculous.
Nobody wants to uproot during a pandemic. But yeah, I totally agree with your point on Dombrowski. He's not taking this job if he doesn't think they're close. I mean, he doesn't care about the Phillies. He doesn't care about Philadelphia, but he does care about his legacy. He cares about his legacy a lot. And this is going to be his last team because then he's going to go do the Nashville thing. He's going to bring a team there. That's what he wants to do. But I'd love to hear, like, what's his long-term plan / short-term plan? Because the one thing I was excited with Dombrowski, I know he can pull off big trades. I know he can throw big money at JT. When they hired Dombrowski, I was like, all right, cool, JT's coming back. He's not going to let him slip away. But I was more excited about some of the fringe moves. I was like, all right, how can he fill out this roster?
You don't just sign Dave Dombrowski. You don't just get Dave Dombrowski to write a check. Like, you could, a number of guys could do that, right?
Yeah, Matt Klentak did that fine when he was signing Jake Arrieta and all those bums. Like,
it's not that hard. That's the easy part. Yeah,
really, I can do it when I turn.
I can spend an owner's money too. Yeah, give me the job.
It's not that hard, but I was always like, all right, can Dombrowski pull off these fringe moves that take a 500 ball club to a five game over 500 ball club, and then maybe we can attack next offseason being real aggressive, go get one of those star shortstops, go get another pitcher, and then you're looking like a playoff team. That's why I was so disappointed, because he had the money to make fringe moves. I mean, he spent a good amount of money outside of the DD and the JT contract, bringing in a Brandon Kinstler and Archie Bradley, Anderson Moore, and they've all kind of just been bad, and that's been disappointing, because I don't know why signing late with the Phillies would have impacted his way to evaluate a pitcher. Like, that's not – there's no correlation there. You can look at the pitcher and tell if he's good or if he's not, and he kind of guessed wrong on multiple players, which has me feeling a little shaky.
But first, I have to tell you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. Did you know that Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors? When you talk to a Built Bar fan, they're definitely passionate about their favorites. If you don't know the Built Bar flavors by now, you're missing out. There's coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel. There's something for everyone. If you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mixed box where you get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. Flavors have 17 to 18 grams of protein, 130 to 180 calories, 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. 9 amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy. Order today, get the raspberry, the mint brownie, whatever you like. Of course, you can get that mixed box. Try a little bit of everything. Go to BuiltBar.com, use that promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Go to BuiltBar.com, use that promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your first order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Also have to tell you about BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season, it's in full swing. You can track all the action at BetOnline.ag. Get the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC, MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all of the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get in the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. And, you know, obviously a number of teams are already in the play. Also have to tell you about BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at BetOnline.ag. Get all the latest news, odds, info for your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all of the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get in the game as teams make their runs throughout the postseason. Head to the website, use your mobile device, sign up today, and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. 50% welcome bonus when you sign up with the promo code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON. And it's BetOnline.ag where you can sign up today.
Exactly right. And so you're wondering what the future of this organization is. Let me ask you about that, by the way. So we're both kind of in agreement that this feels like a 500 team, not where this team's supposed to go. Future wise, I mean, does this team, where's the light at the end of the tunnel for this team getting better, getting to the playoffs? Or do you think there is still a chance that they turn, I don't want to say turn the season around, because they're 500. It's not like they're buried in last place. They're 5 games out of first and have had a number of issues so far this season. Overall, have played pretty well in the month of June. But do we just see these little spurts? Do they ever actually go on a run here? And long term, is there light at the end of the tunnel? What's your sense of optimism, if you have any?
they can spend their way out of this thing, Dan.
They've been doing that for years, or trying to at least. Yeah,
they've been trying to. And I think the one, and again, this is where it comes down to Dombrowski. It's like you let Klentak try to spend his way out of it. It didn't work because he signed bad players. I mean, the McCutchen contract, awful. The Odubel Herrera extension back in the day, awful. You know, the Jake Arrieta contract, awful. The David Robertson contract, a disaster. But now you're turning all that money is coming off the books this winter. You're going to have a lot of money. You're going to have time to make trades, time to reconnect with some of the other presidents around baseball. And you're going to have to spend your way out because they don't have enough prospects. Hopefully Bryson Stott is maybe in the majors next year. You can hope for that. Hopefully Spencer Howard and Alec Bohm continue to develop. But after that, there's nothing. And you got to look at this free agent market. It's going to be a big one. There's obviously a ton of huge name shortstops. There's going to be some pitching talent out there. And you got to try to take the money you have and throw it at the right players and mash it all together and hope that you know, the Mets continue to not be a super great ball club and the Braves continue to regress. And you hope you take the division and give yourself a shot in the postseason. And it's not a good plan. Like, it's not a good plan, but it's the plan.
It's the plan. It's not necessarily a good one, but it's the plan, for lack of a better one, I suppose you could say. I'll get you out of here on these few final thoughts. This weekend, games in San Francisco, it's going to be on Peacock. It's John Miller. I forget the other Giants broadcaster, John Kruk and Jimmy Rollins. You excited for these games on Peacock, or do you like the idea of the combined booth? And what are you feeling about this series?
Well, the Peacock thing is silly. I'm going to be streaming it off a maybe illegal website regardless. I'm not doing anything with Peacock. Not super excited from a baseball perspective. I mean, Vinny's going tonight. I believe Nola tomorrow, so hopefully you get something good there. And then you got Spencer in the bullpen on Sunday. So it's not a favorable set of games for the Phillies. The Giants have been one of the better teams in baseball all year. Gabe Kapler's doing a great job. You're obviously on the road. But, you know, take two or three. You never know. You feel good about that. But it's not going to be an easy two wins if they get there.
If they get two of three, all I was asking for before the Dodgers series was just give me a 3-3 road trip. They'll come home for two against Washington. You still have those four in New York next weekend, I believe it is, with the doubleheader, and then Saturday and Sunday. If you can just, like, Dodgers, Giants, with how well both of those teams have been playing on the West Coast, how bad this team has been on the road, like 3-3 on this road trip would feel like a win. Now, this series, unfortunately, feels like more like one of three, because usually that's how road series go for the Phils and how well the Giants have been playing. But I would be more than happy with two of three. I would be more than, because that feels like the wheels didn't entirely come off after the strong way they started the month. They can come home, hopefully, like they've beaten up on the Nationals actually a little bit this season. You have two games with them, maybe you find a way to win both of those. You play well up in New York, and perhaps this team is above 500 at the end of June. Maybe that's a pipe dream. You're still, I mean, they really need to do some damage in those Mets games based upon the fact that they're just looking up at them. But there's still, again, I'm thinking really optimistic here. There's still time. It's just frustrating to see them go. It's hard to get fully emotionally invested and buy in. I mean, I'm watching them every night, right? But it's hard to emotionally invest belief in this team when you see him go on a run like that, because we've seen it before and they've done it a few times before and it hasn't actually led to brighter times ahead. They kind of just fall right back into place. So that's my big concern with them. I actually thought this was their biggest test all season. I think this is a huge series for them. I thought the Dodgers series was a huge series for them. You're not going to look at the Dodgers series in isolation and say, well, they lost two of three, like this team stinks again. No, but as a whole, this team has to find a way to, like, playoff teams usually find ways to play at least 500 baseball on the road, and they haven't done anything close to that for some time. And you're going to have to beat playoff teams on the road. Like, you can't just beat up on the bad teams and expect that that's going to cut it.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I can't totally buy into this baseball team until they show me over more than a one-week span. I mean, the run they went on, you know, right at the beginning of June, man, that was a lot of fun. But I was sitting there like, you got the Dodgers. And the
you know what's coming. Like, you know, it's around the corner. You can't fool yourself into it. We've seen this movie before. It's not new.
Yeah. And then, you know, then the injuries start stacking on, you know, Gene.
I forgot Bryce to get to that act. Yeah. So
talk about them.
So Bryce and Gene, I mean, you can't overstate how big the loss is for these players, or the fact that the Phillies are suffering injuries to these players. Where are you at with Bryce, not just this season, but long term, that this back bug keeps popping up. We're in year three of a 13-year contract. You feeling so great about the length of that deal right now?
I love Bryce, and I would still do the deal. I'd probably pay him more money just because I think the getting that star, getting him in the building, it was so big for the city. He's electric. I think he's really good at baseball, all that great stuff. With that said, I injured my back my freshman year of college. I'm now graduating. Dan, the back still isn't right. Still not okay. It's not 100%. And I can't even imagine going out there every day and swinging the bat as violently as Bryce Harper does. I mean, he probably has the most violent swing in baseball, right? Maybe like him and Giancarlo Stanton. I mean, he's looking to kill the ball. And the amount of torque, the amount of pressure that's putting on his lower back. I mean, you saw the swing he swung. He's immediately grabbing. He's like, oh, something snapped. And that's not going to get better. I think there's only so much rehab and, you know, modern day medical science that you can do for something like that. At some point, if you have a tweaked back, you have a tweaked back. So fingers crossed, it's not something that continues to linger on. But this is like, what, the fourth or fifth time over the last 2 years where he's had to miss games because of the back. So definitely.
And sometimes they just stick him in games even when he's hurt and they don't even really want him to swing. Like, yeah. That was a bad decision.
No, oh, that was a horrible decision. Let's not even bring that up. That was a disaster. I have no idea what they were doing. But yeah, so the Bryce thing, again, fingers crossed, but just knowing kind of how back injuries work and the way he plays the game has me concerned moving forward.
And then Gene Segura clearly was not running well the other night. I don't know where you're at. So it's been a while since this Phillies team has sent multiple players to the All-Star game. I think Segura and Wheeler have the shot to do it just the way he's been playing. But the guy's got to stay on the field. I mean, they're losing potentially their best bat in the lineup this season.
Yeah, Gene's crazy because I didn't really like Gene after 2019. I was out. I was getting ready to trade him just because they brought him in and he was on a lot of money and he was awful at shortstop that year and the bat wasn't as good as you liked. And I was like, all right, so this was a bust of a trade. And then he's turned it around big time. I mean, he's arguably been their best hitter this season. So yeah, losing him is huge. And you're right. If he would have been healthy the whole season, I think he would make the All-Star game. I don't know if he's going to now just because typically a 500 team below 500 team doesn't get two All-Stars. And obviously Wheeler's getting the one spot. If Gene comes back soon, I don't know if he's going to. Groin strains are yikes as well. If he comes back and he continues to hit, like, it's possible, but he's definitely in that conversation, which is great because maybe you don't have to cut ties with him after this season. You can continue to keep him around.
That's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked on Phillies podcast. Special thank you to David Esser for joining the program. You can catch his work at Section 215 and the Bullpen Blues podcast. For more Phillies talk, again, make sure you're subscribed to Locked on Phillies on Spotify, on Apple, wherever you get this fine program, on Twitter at @LO_Phillies. Make sure you're following myself at @Dan_Wilson4. Get all the sports news you need in less than 20 minutes with the Locked on Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked on Today podcast in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.